Welcome to the Pirates Overboard podcast. I'm your host, Justin Ostwick, joined alongside Jonathan Luters. We are two student athletes excited to sit down with fellow Pirates to talk about their experience here at the Hall and learn more about them on a personal level. Go check out and follow the Pirates Overboard Instagram page for all of our content. And if you want to go watch our podcasts, go to our YouTube page at Pirates Overboard. So let's get into it.
Our next guest is Ina Plana Ventosa. She is a grad student athlete tennis player here at SHU. Ina has an incredible resume built up over the past 5 years of experience here at the Hall, accumulating 4 Big East All-Academic Team nominees from 2020 to 2023, and is a 3-time Intercollegiate Tennis Association Scholar Athlete of the Year. Incredible. One of our fabulous international student athletes, Ina calls Barcelona, Spain home, and credits her family and her upbringing to much for tennis success, both in Spain and in the U.S. In this episode, Ina discusses her wild recruiting story getting her to Seton Hall, her passion for the digital media arts, advice for international student athletes, and her love for Seton Hall as a whole. Ina bleeds blue through and through, and always knew she wanted to be a Pirate, even from a very young age. You'll learn more about that in this episode. So without further ado, Ina Plana Ventosa.
Welcome, Ina Plana Ventosa, from the Seton Hall women's tennis team here today with us. So first things first, how are you doing this afternoon?
Hello, thank you so much for having me here. And I'm doing very well, thank you. How are you?
Very, very well. I was a little nervous about mispronouncing your last name, I'm not going to lie. I did it some practice last night. I practiced in front of you before, and I nailed it before. Did I nail it now?
He did.
Yes! Touchdown for the host here today. So, you guys had your first tournament this weekend of the season. So, team match play went well for both. Mm-hmm. Both you played Hofstra and Wagner. Talk to us how that went for you guys, and you specifically as well.
So, Hofstra, it was the first time that all the freshmen competed, and then one of our transfers. And you know the nerves of the first time that you're competing in the season. You're like, it's nerve-wracking, and you're like, okay, let's see if this season, like, we can get some good results, like, if you can do good. And so I was just there. I was so nervous. We started doubles. And now, we have 3 courts on one side, and then we have, like, the lobby in between, and then 3 courts on the other side. And now, on the first court, next to the lobbies, like, you can put seats there, so, like, they can, nice. People can come and mm-hmm. watch you play. So it was nerve-wracking that there was people on the court just watching you, and I was like, oh my god, I'm so nervous. So it took me a while. The doubles point, we won it. Our 2s and 3s won it. We lost it, but it was tight. We played good. I think there are some things that we could have improved. And then singles game, everybody was hyped, but at the same time, Hofstra, it was like their 3rd match of the season.
Oh.
So, like, they have more experience. They were barking. They were, yeah.
Interesting.
I swear. They were barking at us. They were, like, cheering so loud. And I think it kind of, like, we were a little bit shocked of their reaction of, like, yeah. what they were doing, because why would they bark? Like, their mascot is not even dogs. It's just pride.
Yeah, they're the Hofstra herd. Why are they barking?
Yeah. But anyways, so it was just like, okay, they're imposing. Yeah. But anyways, after getting the doubles point, we're like, whoa, like, we got this. So everybody went to their courts, and, like, the games began. And then personally, I did very good. I was 5-1 down first set. I was playing horrifically. Like, I was so, like, nervous at the beginning as well. I was like, after doubles, I'm like, okay, I'm tied. And then suddenly I had this assistant coach. Her name is Judy. She's amazing. And she was like, all right, we got to change this. Like, such a good positive. Because when I go into the court, I'm just like a beast in the sense of emotions. Like, I start screaming, yelling, like, everybody that knows me playing tennis.
Not barking, though.
Not yet. It can happen, though. I'm just like saying, come on. Like, but then I'm like, what are you doing? It's just like roller coaster. And so this assistant coach is like, all right, you gotta calm down, like, let's think about the things that you can control and stuff. And then suddenly I just like, all right, 5-5, or it was 5-1, 5-2, 5-3, 5-4, 5-5. I and I won the set. I was like, damn, this feels good now. And then the second set I won, and I was like, this is amazing, because I was like in a great disadvantage. Like, the art girl was feeling herself, she was cheering, all the team was there. Like, I was like, okay, this is gonna be tough, but we came back, and then we got that W that I needed for self-confidence.
Absolutely. Yeah, that is amazing. So you kind of touched on it, but what were some of the big takeaways as a team that you saw that you can carry forward into your next two matches, which are another two big ones, against at Monmouth on Friday at 7:45, mm-hmm. then back at home against Rutgers on Saturday. So what are some of the takeaways from this weekend that you can take into next weekend?
I think, so on Saturday we play against Wagner and we got the win. And that was like a big win, because it was the first win of the season, and it was just like, okay, we lost the first time, but then the second one, like, we came back stronger, and like, we were cheering, and we're the ones imposing towards the other team. So I think now we're in the right mentality of like continuing to play throughout the season. Monmouth, we've got good chances to win. We're excited to get there and like beat them at their home opener. So we're just like, we got this. And then against Rutgers, it's going to be at home. Rutgers, it's always been tough, let me tell you. It's just always, they've got something that we've always tried to like get it and like beat them, but it's going to be hard. But hey, we're excited.
Those darn Scarlet Knights.
Honestly.
Those Scarlet Knights.
The jersey fight.
Yeah. The jersey
blue
fight.
Blue and the red.
Yep. So that's amazing. We can't wait to watch it from our homes, or even getting to go over to Murray Court when we can, because you're still inside now because it's too cold, even though it's mm-hmm. sunny out, which doesn't make sense. You've probably been outside all week.
Yeah, we're outside today. Basketball day has been awesome.
So, but you'll come back to Ivy Hill later on in the spring. Mm. Closer to Big East play, I'm looking right now at the calendar. March 28th looks like the first one, maybe?
Yes.
Yeah, March 28th. So later down the line in the spring, there we go. We'll be back at home, back on Ivy Park Hills. So let's take it back really quick. Let's go before Seton Hall. So what was it like playing tennis in Spain?
It was completely different. I started playing tennis when I was 4, because my mom wanted to go to the gym. She needed some free time for herself. So she's like, here you go. Go play tennis. and then also my granddad had always played tennis. All my mom's family had played tennis. So suddenly I was 4 hitting the balls, and my coach from like, that he's amazing, he talked to my parents and was like, all right, she's got something, like, let's like put her in a like a higher level. And since then I've been competing. I think I started when I was 6, so I was like very young.
Yeah.
And since then nonstop till now. The recruiting process, it was hard though, because high school in Spain is very hard. It's tough because you're getting prepared for the SAT back in Spain. And I was also preparing for the SAT here and the TOEFL, which is the English exam, to be able to come to the US.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
While doing the recruiting video, while talking to coaches, while getting the visa. It was just like too much going on. So it was a lot, because you also wanted to improve your ranking so that you could get better offers and like get recruited to better places. But I mean, it worked out. So.
It certainly did. I kind of want to unpack that, if that's okay.
Oh, yeah, of
like
course.
Six different things you kind of have, to like have on your mind mm-hmm. to kind of check off to, I guess, come over to the States and play college tennis. Was that always the goal, to come to the States and play college tennis, or is there like a different multiple different routes to go from like youth tennis on up? What was your, I guess, obviously your route was coming right here, obviously. Well, how would that look like for you?
When I was 12, I was still thinking, do I want to be professional?
Got it.
But tennis is just, the bad thing of tennis is that to become a professional, either you've got a lot of talent that everybody can see you and like they sponsor you, or your parents are like very wealthy and so they can pay for the tournaments. Because to be able to become professional, you have to go through different tournaments, game ranking, like pay a lot of money, because the tournaments are not always at home.
Sure.
It's just like, you have to travel to one place to the other. You have to pay for your coaches, for your physical coach, for your physio, your trainer. It's just like a lot to handle. So there was always a possibility to come to the US. And that was the route that my mom, like, since she learned that, she's like, all right, there is this option. And then at the end, I was like, yeah, let's go for it. Even though it was scary because it was moving across the Atlantic Ocean. And you're like, wow, okay, this is a little bit scary.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
But, I mean, that was the goal since I was like at least 12 to 13, 14. And then every single year that passed by, you were like, yeah, actually, I want to do that, you know.
Getting closer and closer as you age up. Mm-hmm. 12 years old, that's pretty cool to know, like, that's what I want to do. And you mentioned that you had to take two different SATs, like one for when you were back at home and one for the States because of the English portion.
Exactly.
What was that like? Like, were you fluent at that time, like back when you were taking it? What was that whole process look like?
It was very hard.
I can imagine.
Because the SAT from the US, I don't know why it has the English portion and then the math one.
Okay.
Me and math are not friends. No amigos. No. So it was so hard. I was like going to like this tutor that she was helping me trying to like explain what that was, because I don't even know what that was. It was just math. I just couldn't understand that. So it was, I got a quite good result in English, and then math, I didn't do good. So, but it was good enough to like come to the US.
Well, good for you for doing so well on the English side. That being your second language, I can't imagine for us, or at least for me, to go over and do Spanish SAT, that would be no bueno.
Yeah, no. Yeah, I don't think that would end too well, because also, not good at math.
So, I'm feeling that one.
And that's why no math for us. No. We'll get into that a little bit later. But do you have any key memories while playing internationally before coming to the States that you recall that like kind of catapulted yourself to come play here in America?
I think it was just great to be back home and having your parents around, your coaches that you have known them for the since you were a kid, and like everybody pushing you because everybody knew like the goal of like coming to the US, so everybody wanted to help. And so like after going around to some tournaments around like the country and stuff, it was so like nice because you were building yourself as a player and also as a person by the help of like all the people that you love.
Yeah, that is for sure. Did you get to play anywhere outside of Spain? Did you get to play in France, England, anywhere cool outside of Spain?
Just in Ireland, because my parents sent me there for 4 months. So yeah, when I was 14, because my mom wanted me to learn English. I mean, she kind of achieved it, just a little bit. I make a lot of mistakes here, but so I played some national tournaments in Ireland. And one of my teammates, Emily, she's Irish, and she remembers seeing me in one of the tournaments.
No, that is so cool.
National tournament, seeing like, who is that Spaniard over there? Because there is no one from outside of Ireland playing the national tournaments.
Oh my goodness.
And so I got to semifinals of the national championship of Ireland.
Yeah, that's
when
awesome.
I was 14.
Yeah, no big deal. That's so cool to think about too, going cross countries and meeting teammates that you now are teammates with here at Seton Hall. Like, I've done it a bunch in this, like I said on Quinn's episode, I think. We used to swim at the same lake, and he's from Georgia now, and there's a good shot we could have been jumping in the same lake at some point or another, and now we're teammates 10, 15 years later. So it's kind of crazy to think about that whole process of, like, you went through two different countries, and you're like, oh, yeah, that's my teammate. May or may not. Did you beat her?
I mean, I didn't play against her. Like, I didn't know who she was, but she remembered me.
That would be like,
that would have been crazy.
Yeah, imagine that. Like, I remember playing you 7 years ago.
That would have been crazy. So what did the process look like for moving from Barcelona here to the U.S. way back when you were a freshman?
It was, I remember that summer, I was just very sad but excited at the same time. I was just leaving home, like, all my friends, all my family. But my parents, so, all right, first of all, I was supposed to go to Georgia Southern University. Okay. I actually committed there.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember you telling me this story. Uh-huh. Like, I think this year. He's like, we've gone back and forth. We've had, like, classes together and stuff. And, like, we, like work on projects together and stuff. And I heard this story for the first time this year. Yeah. So, continue. Sorry.
So, I committed to Georgia Southern, I think it was, like, November of 2018.
Okay.
Right? I started college in August 2019.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
And so I was talking to a coach for a long time before that, and we agreed verbally that I was going to come to Georgia Southern. And I actually signed it. But one day, I think it was May of 2019, April, he emailed me saying there was a problem within like the department and like we cannot offer you the scholarship. I was like, oh my God, because I was studying for the final exams, SAT. We had the flights booked to come to the US so that my parents could drop me off at Georgia Southern.
Oh my God.
I was like, there's no way. I went to the bathroom. I was like, I called my mom, like, Mom, what am I doing?
Right?
And so in one weekend, I had to talk, while studying for all the exams, I had to talk to 22 coaches that were offering me like spots on their teams. And I had to choose within that weekend where to go. Yeah, it was insane.
What were the deciding factors to Seton Hall from those 22 schools? Like, that's an incredibly tough decision in an incredibly short amount of time.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I wanted to be next to a city. I wanted to be more on the west or the east coast in general,
sure.
Like northern east. And I had great offers. I had an offer from University of Tennessee at Knoxville. Then also Jacksonville State University, Florida Gulf Coast University.
Nice, yeah.
It's just that there was something at Seton Hall that was like, yeah, no, that's a place I want to be. I also wanted to be a pirate for all my life. I've got pictures of when I was like me dressed as a pirate. And I was like 4 or 3, and even my parents telling me, oh, my little princess, I would be like, no, call me pirate.
So it was meant to be.
It was just meant to be.
Very early.
Yeah.
This is meant to happen.
So I was all right, I'm actually going to go to Seton Hall. And I was not sure if my SAT was high enough to get there, to get here. And then when they accepted me, I was like, oh, my God. It felt so relieving to be part of, like, the pirate community, you know?
I can't even, like, you went through just an absolute roller coaster. Talk about roller coaster for emotions.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, going from Georgia Southern, like, there to, like, a weekend.
Yeah.
And then,
yeah.
Like, okay, I'm not going there. Like, I have 22 mm-hmm. phone calls with other coaches
yeah.
while studying for exams. And I don't want to glaze upon the fact either, like, studying for SAT in a different language with two different parts, like,
yeah.
that's, I don't know if I'd be able to do that. I'm very, very impressed with that. That's,
I mean,
that's awesome.
You would be able. I was able. You would be able.
No way. Again.
That would take a lot of practice,
yeah.
as you did. And, like, just don't also flying over the Atlantic, mind you, and, like,
uh-huh.
going from Georgia to New Jersey, two different, like, airports and stuff
yeah.
like that, two different.
So my parents, because we planned the whole vacation during the whole summer, like, for
okay.
a month before coming to college. And the thing started in Florida,
sure.
going to the Keys and then going
yeah.
to Louisiana and then dropping me off at Statesboro, I think it was. Yeah, Statesboro
mm-hmm.
in Georgia. So after that, we had to replan the whole trip. So, but also, okay. So we had to plan the whole trip in order to be able to, like, how do I explain this? So there is a rule in the U.S. that you cannot be more than 30 days in the country before you start studying.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Got it.
Right? So I had to come in as a tourist. And then from Atlanta, I think Atlanta or Dallas, I don't even remember where we got the flight. We had to fly to Canada, Toronto. So that I could, and then we rented a car there. And then we drove into New York so that I could enter the country with a student visa.
Wow.
That's crazy.
And so we then traveled all the way to South Orange.
That is crazy.
That is probably the most wild South Orange there ever is.
You're getting your frequent flyer miles in, that's for sure.
Yeah. So,
there is a more wild story about how to get to South Orange, and I want to know about it. The way to get to, first off, you think you're going to one place. You're like, nope, can't do that. So yeah, I go to Canada, from Georgia to Canada to get to here. That's some crazy.
Props to my mom, because she was the one planning
yeah.
and, like,
Let's skip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good job, Mom.
Yeah. I think that I'm trying to think now of people that have crazy flights, because I know across the seas, probably the craziest is probably Gideon Langenbusch of the swim team from Germany. That's probably a trip.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or Toma Adam from Romania. That's probably a trip.
Well, the golfers. I know some of the golfers
yeah.
out in Asia. Like,
yeah.
They have some crazy
yeah.
long flights.
Yeah. Yeah. Or from Australia as well.
Yeah. I know domestically, I think Walker Perra, we mentioned that guy a lot on this podcast, but he has like three different layovers to get to Pensacola. It's like
it's
Newark to Atlanta, Atlanta to somewhere, and then somewhere to a smaller airport near Pensacola.
There's no direct flight?
No direct flight.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Breaking down flights here on the Pirates Overboard podcast today with everybody. So what advice would you give to any international student making that big move that might be coming in as a freshman next year that are just trying to make that move across the Atlantic, across the Pacific to come play college sports in America?
I would say just go for it. It's one-in-a-lifetime opportunity. If you don't like it, you can always go back home. Mm-hmm. Like, home is always going to be there. But you got to try at least, even if it's like a semester or a year, to stay in the U.S. and try what you've been working for, which is like being your sport for your whole life. And you get new friends, which or a new team, that it, those are friends forever. The classes are amazing. Even if you don't like the location, like, there is, you can always transfer. Mm-hmm. Like, the opportunities are just so broad that I would just tell them, just go. Just go for it.
Just do it.
Yeah, just do it.
Just do it. So, now moving on to being here at Seton Hall, what was that biggest transition from playing tennis in Barcelona to now playing college tennis here in America?
It was hard at the beginning because I was used to playing clay, which is a surface more towards the Mediterranean Sea, which is like the red clay.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And the game is lower. You're used to doing more drop shots, more different type of playing. And then you come here and then everything is just like hard court during the fall semester and then indoor hard court during the spring semester, which is crazy fast. And so having to adapt to that was, I think, the hardest part. Physically and like tennis wise, and so that also took, it was a little bit hard on like mentally, because you're like, all right, I'm here because I'm good, I know that,
right.
But how can I improve my results? And it's just like kind of like, and also tennis is such an individual sport that it's very hard sometimes when you're done feeling yourself to be able to win that match. So I think that was the hard part at the beginning, of like trusting myself and be like, all right, hey, you got it, like everything's gonna be cool, everything is going to be good, just keep trusting in yourself. So I think that was the hard part.
Yeah, that's definitely a difficult transition. Through your college season, do you guys play different courts like at all, or is it all hard court? Like, do you ever play grass or clay, or is it all hard court?
All hard court, yeah.
That's interesting. I don't know, why wouldn't, do you think there's a reason why they don't like go between different surfaces, or is it just there's too much intricacy with it?
I think, I'm not sure. I mean, the U.S., it's mostly hard court. There is also the green clay, but it's not as common. I mean, right now it's pretty common, but I think, like, the main one, the U.S. Open, you see it's hard court. Mm-hmm. So the U.S. is just known for hard court. So I guess that's the reason why.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, I could be completely wrong here. Is it harder to keep up a clay court or a grass court, I'd imagine, than a hard court? Because there's not as much, like, maintenance, maybe? I have no idea.
Maybe. That's actually a good question.
Yeah.
I mean, clay court, it requires a lot of work behind it.
Yeah.
Because you have to water the courts in the summer. It's a lot of maintenance.
Okay.
Now, grass, I guess it was, well, to be honest, I've never played on grass. I've played on fake grass. I don't even know the name in English, if I'm being honest.
Turf, I think. Yeah, turf. Something like that.
Turf. And I don't know what requires to keep them, like, I guess water and, like, the grass. Yeah. If you watch Wimbledon at the end, there's no more grass. So, I'm not sure. But I'm happy that at least we're not playing on grass. That's one thing I'm going to say.
Got it. Well, that's another thing. We'll go up to the NCAA and we'll see what we can do and contact them. Hey, can we change up the courts a little bit? So, what have been some of your favorite moments and memories here, being a part of the Seton Hall tennis team? I have in my notes, bad host of me, 4 years, but this is year five. So, what are some of your best moments, memories here, being part of the team?
That's actually such a hard question because it's been 5 years, as you said.
Yeah.
Definitely just being with the team. I love the girls I love my team. It's just like we're like a big family, big small family actually, because we're just nine. But we get along so well. We are always joking around all the time, nonstop. Even like during practice, we just like start screaming at each other, but like in a funny way, not like in a mean way. It's just like all the time. And then if we want to go somewhere, like the team is the always the one that, hey, do you want to go here in the city? Do you want to explore? It's just like there's always things to do and everybody's down, or mostly everybody is down to do it, do them. So I think it's just like building this family outside of Spain is just the most amazing thing.
And I'm not sure the percentage of how I guess I should ask this, how many of your teammates are international?
So last year were, I think, nine? And nine out of nine were international. All of us, yeah.
So is that something like a common bond that you guys all sit together? Yeah. And we're all from like different places coming here. That's probably something that kind of binds you like right away,
yeah.
Would you say?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, this year we've got three Americans, okay. But they're out of state. So even like they're far away from home, so it's still like, it feels like like an international family.
Got it.
Yeah.
That's such an interesting dynamic from our perspective, because we have 50 people on our team. You have 40 people on your team.
Yeah, but none of them international.
None of them international. Yeah. But like still like nine people. You must guys get so close with one another, yeah. Because it's just those nine. You're seeing them every single day.
Yes.
So through your 5 years, what has been one of your favorite tournaments that you've gotten to play in so far?
I think I have to go for Florida. Every single spring break of Florida, it's always fun. It's always warm. Getting some tan. After
of
the
course.
New Jersey weather, it's tough. So I have to go for Florida. Also playing at the National USDA campus. It's great. The courts are great as well. Also, it's outside, so the courts are like not as fast. I don't know. And then we also we're lucky to be in like this house, usually in a resort, and the whole team is together in the same house. So we share kitchen, loves. We've got a pool. Like it's just great.
That's an awesome.
That sounds amazing. And this year you have Stonehill, Creighton, and St. Joe's down in Florida. So that will be a lot of fun for sure.
And I don't want to switch the topic too fast, but I want to make sure we acknowledge some of the things that you've done here, like stat-wise or award-wise. I mean, it's right here, some of the website, but oh my goodness, like from the all-academic team from all 4 years to the ITA scholar athlete, that four-time?
I'm not even sure.
That's a humble answer right there. 2020, 2021, and 2023 ITA scholar athlete of the year. That is pretty cool.
Thank you.
When you're looking at this and from where you came from back home in Spain, would you have ever imagined that, like, you had the career you had right now?
No, not at all. I'm speechless because I feel so grateful and lucky and supported from back home and as well as from here, that I'm just very proud and happy for everything that I have achieved.
It's awesome, and it's cool to see. Like, I mean, we met our freshman year.
Yeah.
And I know you guys had a bunch of class games afterwards.
We all met in the freshman year.
Yeah.
Oh, you had freshman year too?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I was a little bio major. And were you?
Yeah.
I was studying. We'd run into each other all the time.
Yeah. And I remember both of you from freshman year.
Yeah. CAF was the place to be. Yep,
from the CAF. Yeah. Oh, Thomas. It was Thomas Stas.
Yes.
Because
shout out to Thomas.
So Thomas Stas, who was a sophomore, and he was from Belgium, and funny story with him is he came in January the year before we did.
Yeah, January 2019.
Yeah, so like he came, so he came in, was this like scrawny little kid from Belgium, and like thrown in like 6 weeks later to swim Big East. Like, here you go, go figure it out. The next year he comes back like a mountain of a man, huge individual, and like he's this like amazing person who did like he's getting his PhD I think right now. He's doing so many cool things. PhD, smartest person I've ever met. But I would hang out with him in the library doing bio, and then he met you, which then I met Ina.
Yeah.
Okay.
Boom.
But it was in CAF. I remember
it was in CAF. Yes.
Because I would stay there I think my record was 12 hours in one day. No, no, not even kidding. I've
straight?
From 10 until 10 p.m. Yeah, straight. Day. Not, I didn't leave the calf once.
And then there would be me who would like run in, grab some food on a plate, scarf it down, then run back out to go to another class.
These are the pre-COVID times.
Yes.
Before the pre-dark ages, as Roberto said it.
The pre-dark ages. Like, for a student athlete, and for like anyone, any college student,
mm-hmm.
at Seton Hall, the calf is like the place to meet people.
Yes,
like. And
it
also
is.
Like
yeah.
the dorm. But mm-hmm. now with being like off campus, like, I don't think like you really have the opportunity
yeah,
to kind of mingle people in the cap.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's where I met people my freshman
yeah.
year.
Yeah.
Like that's how I met you. Like that's I think I met the swimmers all that way too.
Yeah, we sit in that middle table.
You have like your own table and stuff like that, but then you're in your mix and like you get up and get food, you talk to the people.
Yeah.
That is a very underrated thing, like how to get out there and just like meeting people.
Yeah.
Like in the cap, like mm-hmm. just it's a very basic thing. You're getting food with someone else.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I think freshman year. All the teams, I mean, every single team was different, but like we would all share things. Like
yeah.
we would sit with the swimmers or with
mm-hmm.
baseball or with
right.
the soccer. Like I feel like it was more of like a bigger family than it is right now.
Yeah.
Maybe, I don't know, COVID happened
I
and
think,
then.
Yeah.
The dark ages.
Yeah. There's an aspect to that because not to like go down this whole rabbit hole, but I remember my freshman year, like we would have like big groups of people.
Yeah.
At least from the baseball
yeah.
team, 40 guys, like being in there. And it
yeah.
was really cool.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't appreciate the
uh-huh.
time, but now looking back,
I haven't seen that because I remember I had oral communication at 8 a.m. on Tuesdays and Thursdays, I think,
okay.
on like my freshman year. I remember seeing the whole baseball team,
yep.
every single one of you in CAF.
Yeah.
I was, and I've never seen that before.
Yeah.
I've never seen that again.
No, yeah. I don't know if it's a post-COVID like thing or like it's always been that way, but
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Okay, there's three things we have to look at now. Hey, CAF people, we need to get everyone from athletics into the CAF, and we need to all eat together.
Yeah.
Once a week, that would be nice. Thank
yes.
you, CAF.
We should have a reunion. Like, there's a freshman of 2019.
I agree.
Get back to the CAF for one time.
I don't know if there's not a lot of us.
I feel like
it's
the three of us, I think.
Yeah.
No, me, you, us three, Walker, again mentioned in this podcast, Jenna Reno, Maddie
right.
Bashin from Swim. That's all from swim. There's only four of us from swim.
No, from tennis.
Other than you. Any
yeah.
from baseball?
Baseball, Devin Hack, Stoff Krakowski, and that's it from, like, that's been
and
years
you.
Right?
Yeah. yeah.
other grad students, but not here as well.
From soccer, but they just graduated.
They're all gone.
Yeah, they're all gone.
Like, same with women's
James
soccer.
Bowen
they're all gone.
Work.
Well, we'll have to make something happen.
Yeah,
we'll,
yeah
no, I agree.
We'll
have
to make
a
something.
Reunion.
A reunion dinner before we all go in the
yeah.
CAF will
yeah.
be on board. So before we get into school, I have to ask the question, what were some of the things that drew you to stay for your fifth year? Was it athletically, academically, a little bit of both? So go into that process of like thinking about staying for a fifth.
Mm-hmm. So as I said, I always wanted to be a pirate. So I was like, I feel like, I don't know, Seton Hall, since the beginning, like even my teammates were like, you leave for this school. Like I've always loved Seton Hall since the moment I got here. I didn't want to leave. I remember in my sophomore year counting, oh my God, I have junior and senior, like halfway done, like I'm sad. Like I just didn't want it to like to be done. And so when COVID happened and then the dark ages, right?
The dark ages. Yeah, the dark ages. That's going to stick.
It just fits.
Yeah.
So when that happened, I was just like, and they gave us an extra year. I always wanted to take it. I'm like, well, let's say 5 years, why not? You know, it's an opportunity. And so when it was coming the time, I was already talking to my old coach, Kevin.
Okay.
I was like, hey, Kevin, like, I want to stay here. But two of my other teammates wanted to stay here as well. So it was the three of us. And they wanted to keep just one of us.
Mm.
At least Kevin, I think. Or, yeah. Or he was like, oh, we'll see. Like, he didn't even know. And then Kevin left. And James started as a new coach. And I remember James had a meeting with like the three of us separately, and we all wanted, hey, I want to stay here, you know. And so he said no to the other two, Hiba and Arena. And then with me, he's like, all right, we'll see, but like, we'll see, you know. And then one day he's like, all right, like you're in, like you're the one. I'm like, oh my God. I was like so hyped at that moment because I was stressed. It was hard looking for a school. I had some options, but at the same time, I just wanted to stay here. I didn't want to go because I had like an option to go to Creighton. And they're a great tennis team. Like, I would have enjoyed myself there. It's just, I don't want to go to Nebraska. Nothing against Nebraska. I'm just a very, like, I'm a, yeah, suburbs girl, city girl, you know, like.
That doesn't fit the East Coast, West Coast.
Yeah, no. It's right just in the middle. Yeah. It was cold. No.
Oh, yeah. It's cold.
It's very cold.
That's funny. But now that you're here in your master's program, we're in the same master program, the MS Professional Communication and Digital Media Arts. It's a brand new program this year. We are proud to be the inaugural class of it. We'll be done by, we'll be walking in May. We'll be done by July 3rd, we found out.
Yep. Wait, what?
So we have one class left.
I thought we were going to be done by August, but then when she said July 3rd.
July 3rd, so... That's let's go Seton Hall.
You're going to be walking before.
Yes. Yeah. So, like, they have a, I think it's with any school, and I could be wrong with this. If you're getting your master's and you have 3 credits left, you can walk the semester before you're getting done. You won't get your diploma until you're done, but you can walk. This way, so, like, your class can walk together. Yeah. Plus, with us being in the summer, we'll be done by July, and I think you would walk in August. Yeah.
If not, it would be very sad, just a graduation for 3 or 4 people.
Yeah,
just
it's a very
there.
Small program, four people. So
I didn't even think about it that way.
Yeah.
People walking, yeah.
We would be cheering one to the other. Yeah.
I'm excited to see how that works because I know it's a lot smaller of a ceremony and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I think it's on campus, so that should be pretty cool.
Yeah.
But
I think of Walsh.
I think so, Walsh. Maybe Bethany. I don't know. Well, when
we'll
get those details, we'll find out. But what were some of the things that drew you to that brand new program?
So I wanted to stay in Seton Hall one more year. And plus, education in the U.S. is quite expensive. So I was like, let's try to find like master's program that is interesting for me and like finish it in 1 year. At the beginning, this program was not there. So I was like, all right, I'm going to do MA Communication. And we'll figure out like after the first year how to continue like doing my classes and like being able to pay it. And then suddenly, I don't know what happened, but they sent me an email, hey, there's this new master's just 1 year. I was like, hold on, what?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
This is an amazing opportunity. So, and also it's STEM program, which it's great because that helps towards my OPT, which is kind of, it's not a visa, but it's a status of you being as a student that you can do an optional practical training after you graduate and you can work in the U.S. Legally, obviously, while finishing your education.
Okay.
It's like, yeah, optional practical training. Like everything that you've studied in the U.S., you can practice it by working.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Either as an internship or as a full-time job. And so every single international student gets 1 year. It doesn't matter if undergrad or postgrad. Okay. But if it's STEM, you get 2 more years. So now I have 3 years, if got once,
that's
for
dope.
Me to stay here.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I just need to find a job. So, hey, everybody. Job in communication, digital media.
Talk to LinkedIn.
And I'll send you an email.
What a cool... It sounds like a great program.
Yes.
Yeah,
you guys were talking before you started recording. How did you guys kind of like both get into this program? I know you did the email you sent out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But what was the draw to the program in specific? Because it's such a new program, and I have this question for both of you guys.
Yeah.
Now I'm the host now.
He took over. He took over.
Go ahead.
I mean, I was studying, my major was visual and sound media. During my undergrad, and I've always been interested in production and cameras and all that stuff. And yours was journalism?
Yeah, it was journalism, yeah.
So I think we both are in this field of communication, in different fields, but like we both, I guess, want to do the kind of the similar thing related to sports.
Sure.
So I think that program was like, okay, that's a great opportunity because we're both here doing masters. We both started as MAs.
Mm-hmm.
We are taking the same class, and then we both talked after like they announced the MS, I think so
yeah,
and we're like, oh yeah, I'm gonna start doing it, and Justin was like, I'll do it as well. So
awesome.
So I was gonna go in the MA, and then I saw the MS, and we got to take one class the last semester of our senior year. But what drew me in was because I've worked here for so much, or for those 2 years, I wanted to hone the skills of what I've learned here, like through different Adobe tools. We just got the new Adobe programming, I think, last year. I think something like that. So, like, having classes be set up to work on those skills was huge. Like, we were talking before, we had a class called Emerging Media Studies, where the class was set up where you had a reading 1 week, you had a project, basically, announcement the next week, mm-hmm. you had a workshop of that project, and that project was due.
Yeah.
So it was split up like that, and each, it was like for 1 month it was audio, so you had to do a podcast. The next month was graphics. Mm-hmm. You used Adobe Express and Photoshop and stuff like that. And the final one was a video project, which we did. We, like, my group did a hype video for the women's basketball team, mm-hmm. with a graphic involved. I think you did the lantern fly. The PSA on lantern flies and why they need to die. basically, yeah. But it's a really good program. Like, now being in the second semester, it's a heavier course load for both of us. We're taking five classes, but that's also us wanting, like, let's get it done type of thing. Sure. But, like, the classes that we're taking are so beneficial. Like, the one, I think we can all touch on this, and you said it perfectly before, this presentation class we have, designing and producing effective presentations. It's a 7-person class, and it's so good in the sense that it's all the things you need to work on to present to people in the real world. Mm-hmm. And with it being only 7 people, you can really get into the nitty gritty of, like, critiquing somebody, because you all know each other because you've been in the same program now for almost a year. Mm-hmm. And then it's not like you're listening to 20 presentations of the same thing. Everyone has a different thing to present. So it's just a really cool program, and I'm excited to finish it out.
And also, it's very personalized. Like, this, yeah. the same class, like, our professor, she goes into details of, like, hey, you should improve this, mm-hmm. this, or how can you become better at this part? It's just, like, you feel like it's so personalized that you're learning, which is, it's a great feeling.
Yeah. And I think also, too, which is cool, so for the MA Communications master's, it's a 2-year program, obviously, but you have to write your master's thesis paper, and that's a long paper, lots of research, this, that, the other thing. But being a part of the MS, we have projects, a lot of writing and stuff to do still too, but our projects are oriented of what we want to do in our field. So, for example, the one I've decided to do, I'm going to be doing another podcast and possibly hosting another podcast, don't have the name for it, but the criteria behind it's going to be, we're going to sit down with Seton Hall student-athlete alumni that have transitioned out of college athletics going into the real world.
The dark ages, you could
call it. The dark ages of the real world, I guess you could say. And, like, getting to know how they transitioned out and, like, how they mentally coped. Because, like James Boot said to us way back when in first episode 1 in August, he's like, I'm finishing up soccer in November, and then I graduate in December, and then I am in the real world, and I'm not without my sport. For the first time in a very long time. So I think getting those stories and that advice, really, from those previous student athletes will be a huge benefactor to anybody who wants to listen. So that's mine. Do you want to go through yours really quick?
I'm very excited for your project, because I feel like we can all, it can be very beneficial to all of us, because we're all in the same boat here.
Yeah.
But my project, I still don't know, I'm still talking to the professor, but it's going to be more of, like, creating a website with my portfolio of all the pictures, edits, videos that I've done, and kind of, like, also creating a little of a manual, mm-hmm. of teaching how to, like, for example, take pictures, because take pictures, if it's darker inside, you need, like, different adjustments in the camera, or if it's brighter outside, like, different adjustments as well. Or how to do graphics. And so my idea in that is, like, first of all, a portfolio for myself, but also one thing in this field that we're in, but especially the one I'm at, which is production of cameras and stuff, it's that it's mostly ruled by men. So I kind of, like, want to teach my female counterpart to become, like, very comfortable and good at, like, this field as well.
That's awesome. That's really, mm-hmm. really good stuff.
Yeah. Even just in the field alone, men and women, like, learning how to do that stuff where it's not, like, this thick of a textbook page of, like, this is how you're going to take a photo. Here are all the details of, but, like, a step-by-step of, like, okay, let's experiment with this, that, the other thing. That's mm-hmm. kind of along the lines of, and I, like, Dr. T, when we had our thesis meeting, first week of class this semester. It was the four of us, and we're just brainstorming ideas. She's like, you know, maybe I'll get you in touch with a publisher. Maybe we'll publish the book. Mm-hmm. So you might be an author of a book, and it's going to be out there in the real world for people to see, which is really cool.
She said it takes a long, long time. Oh, that's why we're pushing more towards the website part. Mm-hmm. But she's like, if you want to publish a book, like, I'll hook you up. I'll help you, like, even when we're done with the master's. So that's what I'm saying of, like, it's very personalized. Yeah. Like, you can talk to the professors. They actually want to help you. So it's just great.
Well, I would say, like, shout out to this program. We don't get too big here. We can't become too many people. And, but what a cool opportunity that you guys have to do these really personalized products in things that you want to do.
Right.
And get, like, really awesome hands-on, like, learning.
Mm-hmm.
And learning these skills of, like, how to interview correctly, mm-hmm. how to talk to mm-hmm. people. Yeah. You were talking about improv before.
Yeah.
Like, these are awesome skills that can be used in any field. So I think it's really 100%. Cool.
And I think... too, and this is the last kind of point, and I'm gonna have one more question for you, then we're gonna go into Vice of the Pirate. But I think the biggest thing too is the focus is on what are we gonna do outside of college, how are we gonna boost you up outside of college.
That's huge.
That can help you get a job.
Sure.
So like for me, like I want to get into radio production. Okay, perfect. Podcast, let's do it.
Yes.
Like that's, you're gonna use all the skills of getting guests, getting this, doing all the things that you need to do when you get to a bigger time company. You already know how to do.
Right.
So, so last question for me really quick. So you kind of already touched on it jokingly, but what are some dream post-grad goals that you have? Is there like a dream company that you want to work for, or what are your aspirations post-graduation?
I would love to get into sports media. I don't care of the sport. I love all sports, even though there are some sports that I don't know the rules, but even if I want to like to highlight them, to create graphics, to be creative, that's my goal. But even if that does not happen, working in marketing, digital media, social media manager, like graphic designer, anything, it would be great. It would be a great opportunity to be able to be creative and not being in like an office for 24/7. Mm-hmm. That's the only thing that I'm like, I don't know if I would be able to do that because I like to move. Like even when I get creative, I just need even to go for a walk or like, to be scrolling on TikTok to get ideas from like a person talking about something and then the other one's dancing. It's just like, I don't know. Everything can help in like the creative process.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's huge.
I can't wait to see it. I'm excited for it. So as we wrap up here, here's our last two segments. First things first, advice to a pirate. So what advice would you give to a young international student athlete making their season debut from overseas, playing for the first time in the United States? So maybe a young freshman tennis player who played their first game, or maybe a young golfer about to step foot on the the pitch? No. The golf course? The course. Yeah, there we go. The golf course without like with their parents and family and friends behind them because they're overseas. So what advice would you give as they make that first start or play?
I would say be confident because the fact that they recruited you to come overseas and to play for the universities because they believe in you and they know you know how to play and you're a good player. So I think first of all is just believe in yourself and think that behind everything that you're doing, you've got your family and your friends back home that they've pushed you since minute one.
Right. Yeah. And I think about it from like a perspective of like I have my family 4 hours away.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine what it's like for having your family like a 6-hour plane ride away or even further than that. But it's always good to know that they're only a phone call away.
Yeah.
I know probably for you, you probably have like a lot of virtual touch with your family and friends. That's always big. But to know that like, hey, they always have your back no matter what, it's always a really good feeling. So that's an awesome answer.
Amazing. Amazing. So now it is time for Walk the Plank. So these are going to be quicker based questions. But if you have a little bit of an explanation, please feel free to explain. So favorite all-time movie?
Pirates of the Caribbean.
Ah, ooh, perfect.
I was four, I swear. I'll show you later the pictures of me dressed as a pirate.
Next one. Favorite all-time song?
Whoa, that's a hard one. I actually could not tell you. I've got so many. See, I like all genres.
All genres, okay.
So I've got one, which is Wish You Were Here by Pink Floyd.
Okay.
Like rock, kind of. And then I love reggaeton, which is it's Spanish music.
Yeah.
And I've got many of those as well, and some hip hop. I don't know.
So you and Jason must get along real well in the weight room when old time rock and roll stuff.
Yeah, I don't like heavy metal though. Sorry, okay, Jason. Fair enough. I have to say, sometimes, especially in the morning, it can give headaches.
Well, I want to acknowledge Andrew Gingerelli, we've always been our favorite fan of the podcast. He has said that the tennis music is
the best.
One of his favorites because it's something a little different every time. Who's in charge of the music for you guys in the weight room, or is it like kind of rotate?
We always say 2000s hits.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
So it's just like Usher and then Katy Perry and... And it's great. And then Jason is like, oh my God, I know every single female artist there. He's like, I have no idea of the male ones, but this is Katy Perry.
Let's go.
There we go, Jason. The musical mastermind in the weight room sometime. So, favorite meal that your parents make for you at home?
Ooh, wow. I have to go with the Spanish meal of... I mean, we don't make it that often, though. It's like the Spanish omelet, which is potato, eggs, and onions, but also combined with bread and then scraped tomato on top and olive oil. That always shout out delicious. Olive oil.
Oh, extrovert.
Always. You know me. Yeah. You remember the calf.
No, this is actually an important thing right now. This is a conversation. Because I've heard a lot of things about, like, it's really good for you health-wise and all of this, but you've been saying this since day one.
Since day one.
And I didn't understand that. You're 100% correct.
I would carry my olive oil to calf every single day.
This is true. 100% true.
The bottle of olive oil, a quarter of a gallon. And I had, like, two in my room. And so I would carry them. All the time, and I would put them in every single meal. And I still, I mean, I have the olive oil at home, but sometimes when I'm with the team on a trip, I'm still bringing like a small bottle of olive oil.
Let's go.
To put it on top of everything.
Well, I remember I asked you about it, and you're like, well, do you see like the calf? No, not to throw shade at the calf first off. But the calf has like the olive oil thing like next to the egg, and you're like, That's not it.
It's just like you can see it with the color. When it's like very, very green, you're like, okay, this is good olive oil.
Okay.
It has to be olive oil, though, because there is a lot of different types of oils.
Sure.
Avocado oil, but the most healthy one, even though it's like it has a lot of fat, but it's like good natural fat, is the olive oil.
We're going to talk more about this afterwards.
All right. Next one. Hot tub or cold tub down in the training room?
Hot.
No question.
Do you use the cold tub at all? This is a question we're asking everyone.
I've used it. It's a pain. If I go there, I have to wear socks because my feet get so cold that I cannot deal with it.
That's a very fair thing to say.
Yes, that's been an overall socks got to be on in the cold tub, but not I. Toes are out. Favorite tennis player?
I have to go with, Roger Federer as a male one. Also Rafa Nadal, because the Spanish counterpart. Or Carlos Alcaraz. I'm saying and then Serena Williams.
Awesome.
Yeah. All right, next one. Which would you prefer on? You kind of answered already, but grass, clay, or hard court?
Clay. Always clay.
Would hard court rank last or second?
Second. Because I don't know grass, and I know grass is very, very fast, and I would not see the ball.
Is grass faster than hard court?
Oh, yeah. Much more.
Really? I wouldn't guess that.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It's so, I mean, if you see the turf when the ball bounces, it just like...
Yeah, it skids. Like, think with a baseball. Like, think when you're playing on clay when compared to when you're just playing on a all turf field. Like, it slows it down a little bit, you know. Yeah. Big grass guy over here. Yeah. Last one for me. In one word, describe your play style.
I have to say crafty.
Why crafty?
Because I don't like power all the time, even though sometimes I need to hit that ball the hardest as I can. And then James is like, I know. And I'm like, okay, sorry. But I also like to switch it up. Volleys, drop shots, loopy balls. I feel like I've always played like that. It's a very clay type of game. And yeah, I would say crafty.
Amazing. That does it for me.
I think that's the first crafty I almost said the first crafty answer. It's not true. That's awesome. Mm-hmm.
We're going to have to go back and look at all these words. Maybe we'll do something with them one day.
We've had, like, unique. We've had...
Dog.
What's that dog?
Mark.
Mark Miller. We've had... We can go on and on. Crafty, that's the first crafty we've had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Awesome. Some people that have done three words and combined it to one. I forget who did it, but... Shout out them. Yeah. That's not one word. That's three. But yeah. So
anyways,
yes.
If you have nothing else to add,
I got nothing
else to add. I know. Anything else to add before we wrap things up here?
Thank you so much. That's been so much fun.
Yeah.
Like, awesome. This is just like catching up, like since freshman year with you guys. So
yeah, it's amazing.
So Ida, thank you so much for coming on, taking an hour or so out of your day. I know you're in season, no less. So we really appreciate it. Thank you for all, I don't want to say service, but all the 4 or 5 years that you've given to Seton Hall, on the court, in the community, in the classroom. You're doing awesome things. Keep it up, and we're wishing you well and rooting you guys on. So
thank you so much. Thanks, guys.
Of course, and that will wrap up this episode of our Pirates Overboard series. I forget which episode, but it's episode, we're almost in the 30s, Jonathan. We're pushing for 50. We're going for 50.
You got it.
We'll get 50 by the end of the year. I'm calling it now. But that will do it from us, so... From Jonathan Luters, Justin Ostwick, and Ina Plana Ventosa.
Yes, nail it.
We'll see you next time.